case number 87190, Ms. Casa Gonzalez versus Mr. James Rios. And I see that the Helen's here, Ms. Winston, and this your client.
Yes, Your Honor, we just request permission that she be able to sit at the table.
Okay, all right, that's fine. All right, and this is Mr. Rios over here.
Your Honor.
Okay, I see Ms. Levitt. Are you going to be making the argument?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Okay, and you brought additional counsel with you?
I did. This is brought to you shareholder Eric Walmer.
Okay. Okay, welcome. Thank you for coming to Carson City and also taking this case through the pro bono program. The court entered an order on May 13th in which it denied the motion to strike the reply and supplemental appendices from the appellant. And the court indicated, though, that that decision is without prejudice, meaning it could be reconsidered today, and that oral argument would be the appropriate time to address this, and that additional time might be granted. The normal time is 15 minutes for an argument, plus time for rebuttal if the appellant wants it. We're going to start the argument today with this procedural issue that was I just mentioned, and that might mean additional time. We're going to see how that goes and then make a decision as this progresses. But assuming that it's a normal process, Ms. Winston, do you want to have any rebuttal time reserved?
I would appreciate just 4 minutes or 3 minutes.
Okay, 4 minutes or so. All right, this is the concern regarding the motion. The appellant filed the supplemental appendices that includes information that perhaps could have been provided earlier and wasn't, and then also new information. So our focus right now is on the new information. New information meaning what has happened since the district court entered its change of custody decision in August of 2023. That is the order that's under appeal. However, a number of proceedings have happened in the district court since that time, and we have various information that's in the appendices indicating that the district court left the original custody order in place, the pre-August of 2023 order in which Ms. Casa Gonzalez had custody, due to the stay that this court entered. And then the court, it was a temporary stay, then this court entered another stay order and it only applied to the 90-day suspension of time. So that meant that the custody order that was entered in August, last August, would be back in effect, and apparently that's what the district court did. Then there's further information filed, though, indicating that Mr. Rios didn't exercise his custody time or even implement the change of custody. So I don't know if that's exactly what happened or not, but I'm just reciting what's in the record. Then we get to February and March of 2024. There's further hearings, and the district court indicated, according to the minutes, we don't have an order, that it was giving temporary custody to Ms. Casas Gonzalez, through the end of the school year, or until she filed a motion for a permanent change of custody, apparently seeking to go back to the pre-August order. So the issue here is a motion to strike this information, yet within the response filed by Ms. Casas Gonzalez opposing that motion to strike, she references the Mac Manley versus Manley case, which is the 2006 case in which the Nevada Supreme Court said that when there is a change of, when the court is attempting to make a change of custody since the time it entered the custody order that's on appeal, that there's a certain procedure to be followed when that could happen, and the Supreme Court indicated that the procedure is appropriate. The court simply cannot change custody when the matter is under appeal because it loses jurisdiction. However, it can enter temporary orders on emergency basis to protect the children or for other certain reasons. So that apparently is what is in front of us, except we don't have a motion that was described in McManley to remand the case to the district court to finish its proceedings regarding a change of custody. And it's not entirely clear as to exactly what relief the appellant, Ms. Casas-Gonzalez, is requesting in the district court, other than to something to go back to the original order that existed before August of 2023. So our starting point here today is to find out if the appellant is in fact seeking a remand under the McManley structure laid out in that 2006 opinion or something else. And if it's something else, then we have the issue to strike right in front of us, and we have to decide that. So I have tried to summarize this as to where we are in this case. Before I go any further, is there anything Judge Bola or Judge Westbrook you want to say regarding the procedural aspects of this case and what you want the parties to address at the outset?
Sure. I mean, there was some language in McManley that I'm particularly interested in, and it's at page 856. And essentially, that portion of the opinion indicates that, yes, emergency changes in custody, temporary emergency changes in custody, are not precluded when a case is on appeal. However, there's language that says if the district court's emergency order will necessitate a longer term custody change or will implicate the custody issues on appeal, then the party seeking the change must immediately move for a remand from this court and attach to that motion the district court's emergency order. And I guess my question is going to be, you know, essentially, we need to know, is this something that applies in this case? Do the parties believe that the emergency custody motions that were made below implicate the custody issues on appeal such that this procedure is required of them?
Okay. All right. Thank you, Judge Westbrook.
I have nothing further to add at this time.
All right. Thank you, Judge Bola. All right. You know, the way the argument works is one side talks until they're done, and then the other side talks till they're done. If this was in district court, we'd have more of a back and forth. That's not really the setup, though, for this court. So, Ms. Winston, you're going to have to anticipate some of the things the other side might say, and you know, we'll see if there's enough time to be able to respond to that. But you're going to have to go ahead with the rest of your argument, too.
Okay, you're
on. Okay. All right, thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Hannah Winston on behalf of the appellant, Ms. Casas-Gonzalez. We did implicate that procedure McManley by referencing it in the opposition to the motion to strike. I thought that the court might have questions about that because we included the reference to the emergency motion being sought in a different briefing on the motion for an extension of page limits on the reply brief. So I thought this issue might come up, and especially because of all the briefing on the motion to stay that was originally filed. The reason that we have not filed that specific motion in the district court is because, unfortunately, in the trial court below, the district court took it upon itself to do a sua sponte investigation of the entire case file. There were several comments made during the hearing that were hostile toward Ms. Casas-Gonzalez, toward the children in the case. And it really appeared from my review of the record, I was not trial counsel at the time, that the district court had closed her mind to hearing evidence in the case. Because of that issue, we really didn't feel that filing that motion, even if granted on a temporary basis, or if she said, you know, eventually we'll have a longer evidentiary hearing, the district court's comments and continued actions in the district court just show an inability to hear evidence in an impartial manner. And so that's why we haven't filed that motion. We wanted to preserve our right to make the argument to this court, you know, that the district court should be reassigned so that Ms. Casas-Gonzalez can have a fair trial.
Well, Ms. Winston, let me ask this question. Hasn't the court already, by emergency motion, changed the custody to your client?
That is correct, Your Honor. The district court did do that on an emergency basis, only after first returning the children to Mr. Rios when he informed the district court that he would immediately unenroll them from school, that he did not have stable housing, that he was living in a motel. And, you know, we fought in that evidentiary hearing. We asked the district court, we said, you have jurisdiction to enter a temporary order right now that does not require three children to sleep on the floor of a motel room, even for one night, with a parent who has not contacted them in months. He requested phone calls with the children. There has been zero attempt to have a phone call with any of these children. He didn't call on holidays, birthdays.
Ms. Winston, though, the point is that the circumstances seem to have changed. I just double-checked the dates here. The fast-track opening brief was filed on November 27th, and the reply brief was filed on April 1st. So over that time period of several months, the situation has changed pretty dramatically, including the hearing that happened on March 1st. So that would have been the time in your reply to not just mention these circumstances, but actually ask for the remand.
I understand, Your Honor. The issue before us was that this, we are not getting a fair chance in the district court. I understand that the district court gave the children back, but there have been multiple instances. We requested to do very limited discovery into a criminal investigation that was occurring into Mr. Rios, or at least into the home where he had the children. The district court immediately just wouldn't even entertain discussion about the issue. I was contacted by the officer. It had nothing to do with my client. And as an officer of the court, I represented that to the district court. And I think just that decision to give the children back, knowing he's going
to... Let me stop you there. We have the minutes from that March 1st hearing, and that's part of this motion. Is there an order that was filed after that hearing?
The district court directed us to submit a proposed order conforming to what occurred. We did that. It has not been signed by the district court.
Is there a transcript from that hearing?
There is not a transcript from that hearing.
There's no transcript?
We could get one if the court, you know.
Well, the minutes say that the parties were put under oath, and this issue that you're describing came up, and that your client testified that, you know, this, she didn't instigate this investigation, and that Mr. Rios thought that she did investigate it. And so the court, you know, took notice that there were conflicting positions on that point. I don't know that it actually made a ruling on it.
The district court did deny the request for post-judgment discovery, and I believe it was in an order that was entered subsequent, but it was on a different motion. We had filed a motion after this court lifted the stay partially. We filed a motion requesting a temporary parenting plan, and requesting to do this post-judgment discovery, and the district court denied that motion.
But the focus seemed to be whether Mr. Rios was able to provide a home for the children, and the district court apparently concluded that he was not able to at that point in time, and the court wanted stability, and therefore it granted the temporary motion under emergency basis to grant custody to Ms. Casas-Gonzalez. I mean, isn't that like the big picture of what's going on here? She has the custody, and the district court sets till the end of the school year, or you file the motion to change custody. And so I take it that no motion has been filed yet.
We have not yet filed that motion based on the fact that the district court's comments and the severely punitive order that was entered in August 2023 demonstrate that we need a new judge on the case, Your Honor.
Okay, so you're...
The counsel, MacManley...
Go ahead, Judge West.
Go ahead, Chief.
All right, just to finish this, so your position is you think the district court is biased and therefore you're not going to take further action?
I, based on this exchange, we probably will, Your Honor. The issue is when a judge has already closed its mind to evidence, going forward, that will still be there.
Okay, so a couple of questions. How can you say that the judge closed her mind to evidence when she effectively has given your client temporary emergency custody? That's the first question. The second question is, in MacManley, it doesn't appear that this is an optional, an optional thing that you can do. It says the party seeking the change must immediately move for a remand from this court. That doesn't sound like optional language that gives the choice to the parties to decide whether or not they feel like it.
I understand. In regard to the first question, yes, the district court did end up changing custody on an emergency motion in pretty extreme situation, but only after returning the kids to Mr. Rios, knowing that he was going to take them out of school and keep them in a motel room in Fallon on the floor with multiple other people in that motel room. That was very concerning and obviously caused this traumatic upheaval in what the kids were used to. So that was very alarming for us. I agree that the language in MacManley says must. I think there should be an exception when there is such a punitive order that's been entered. And if the district court says until the kids are out of school or until the appeal, we were faced with a decision that was very difficult to make when we had a district court judge that we didn't feel was going to listen to new evidence.
So there's...
When you indicated, Ms. Swenson, that there was a punitive aspect to that order, what are you specifically referring to?
I'm referring to the August 2023 order. It was nearly a termination of parental rights. It imposed an immediate 90-day no-contact provision at all between Ms. Casas Gonzalez and her three children, whom she had raised since birth under lawful custody order, having primary physical custody. And after that 90-day period, then she was awarded one supervised visit with these children per month. She was also given only informational legal custody rights. And that's sort of the issue here, is that all of these events that have transpired after have shown how detrimental it was for these kids. They weren't put in school, and Ms. Casas Gonzalez was not informed of that. They would not have passed their respective grade levels. So the severe punitive nature of that order was a huge factor in the decision to move forward with the appeal.
Okay. Well, that goes to your argument about the sole custody pretty clearly, and that court already intervened on this court on emergency basis. So, you know, that issue is still under consideration by us. But what about the rest of the district court order?
So I'm short on time, but there's a couple issues that I would like to address.
We're going to get some extra time since we spent about 9 minutes on the procedural issue.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. So a very important issue that I think should be addressed is what the appropriate scope of a district court's interview in a child custody proceeding should be. We raised this in our briefing. The district court here appeared to take her role as an investigator to determine whether the allegations of sexual abuse that occurred years prior were credible. The district court viewed her role as investigating whether the children's statements concerning that they wanted to live with mom, whether those were adequately justified by an 8- and 9-year-old child. That should not be the goal of a child interview in a custody case. It should be to determine the preference of the child, which is why, we make sure that children are of sufficient age to be able to express that opinion. But to require children who are 8 and 9 to have to prove that their reasons are good enough to a district court judge places kids in a really difficult position. And we end up with situations here where the district court is largely removing custody because she doesn't find the kids to be credible.
Well, the parties agreed to that procedure, though. Have the judge talk to them, and it's not transcribed, apparently. I mean, there are various procedures within NRCP 16.215 on how you can have children interviewed. And that's one of them. Have the court do it. You could have had a third party do it. And apparently now, on the psychologist issue, I mean, now you have a psychologist report, correct?
Correct.
And so, I mean, that's, you know, that's another way, a psychologist. But at any rate, I mean, these were young children. These weren't teenagers.
Correct. They were very young. And I think if the district court got in there and said these kids aren't of sufficient age or maturity, then the testimony should have been disregarded. Instead, it was used to take away custody. One particularly notable finding is the kids told the judge that they had cereal for dinner the night before. The district court used that in its best interest analysis to say that that was concerning that mother gave them cereal. I don't know a parent in the state who hasn't acquiesced to giving cereal for dinner, and that shouldn't be a basis in a best interest analysis.
Wasn't the larger thrust of what the district court was saying that it believed that Ms. Casas-Gonzalez had been interfering with Mr. Rios' parenting time, and it happened repeatedly through the various investigations, which is one of the same allegations that was made in the Mac Manley case?
That was one of the district court's concerns. She said there was possible coaching. She also said she was concerned that there were many interviews that the children had been subjected to over the course of these investigations. But the first issue is district courts aren't equipped to interview children to see if they've been coached. The reasoning that she gave is that the children had said that dad gave them alligator meat or that he didn't let them play with toys. These are answers that children would give. So it's very difficult as a district court judge or as a lawyer to say an adult told a child to say that to me in a court interview when the therapist is there testifying saying, I see no evidence of coaching. I don't see that these kids have been told to say these things.
All right, you're low on time. You're still going to get the 4 minutes for rebuttal. You've expressed that concern there. Is the psychologist no longer an issue now? It's part of your appeal?
The psychiatric evaluation, largely it is moot because it has already occurred. But I think that the basis for that order, which is that the district court found some of Ms. Casas-Gonzalez's testimony to not be credible, shows that there isn't sufficient.
Right, but if it's moot, it's moot, and we'll be moving on.
Okay, thank you.
All right, what is your, you've talked about the bias issue, you know, throughout your argument. Is there, I mean, what is your overall thrust on that other than you don't think a fair hearing was held? You've given a few examples. I mean, you know it's a very high standard to disqualify a judge.
I agree. And, Your Honor, I didn't even want to mention it today, but that is the reason why we didn't seek the limited remand, and so I had to do it. The overall issue in this case is that there was a nine-month period between the party settlement agreement in court and then Mr. Rios filing a motion to modify custody. That should have been the time period the district court looked at. Instead, the district court reviewed an entire case file to find a substantial change in circumstances and modification based on that independent review.
Any objection during the proceeding?
There was an objection to, you know, the lawyer below said, we're here to talk about right now. There's a big history. We're not here to determine the history. Would I have stated that objection differently, and would I have hoped to see a different objection? Yes. During closing argument, the lawyer repeatedly tried to refocus the district court to the past 6 months. There's been no contact by dad, and the district court just ignored those objections.
All right. Thank you very much. Then,
thank you.
We'll have 4 minutes on rebuttal, and we'll see if the respondent needs any extra time here, too. All right, Ms. Leavitt, welcome.
Thank you. Chief Gibbons.
If you feel like you need extra time, let me know. I mean, as I mentioned, we spent almost 9 minutes just on this procedural issue, which is wasn't part of the original plan when this oral argument was scheduled.
Understood. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, go ahead.
Good morning, Chief Judge Gibbons. Good morning, Judge Bola, Judge Westbrook. My name is Jamie Leavitt. I represent the respondent, Mr. Rios. May it please the court. So to begin where this court asked us to focus, which is on the procedural issues here, it's probably best to first set the table by quantifying really the factual history here, which is that this appeal represents Ms. Casas' 17th bite at the apple, trying to thwart James's parental rights by alleging abuse. We, as you can see from the record, we've had reports to the police department, child protective services, rape kits, the school district's involvement, review from therapists, behavioral specialists, the Department of Children and Family Services, the Churchill County District Attorneys, years of observations by the Reno Family Police Center, pediatrician examinations, the Paiute Nation Law Enforcement, the Federal Bureau of Investigations, petition to the district court, hearings, motions, and now today in tandem with the district court. Each bite at the apple has failed up to this point. Each claim unsubstantiated, no findings made that Mr. Rios abused or abandoned his children, and no charges filed. And as this court said in the order denying our motion, that it would review the supplemental appendices and the supplemental argument, if appropriate, which would be if there are changed circumstances here. And Your Honor, there is not changed circumstances here. Given the history of this case, there is no surprise to learn that Ms. Casas has continued litigating the custodial order that she appealed to the district court down below. And as mentioned in our motion to strike.
Which order are you referring to? Because there are a lot of orders here. I mean, the district court in its August order, the one that's under appeal, may describe the order that was entered in 2018. In your reply brief, you mentioned the 2019 order that was by stipulation. What order are we talking about on appeal?
I apologize, Your Honor. We're talking about the August 1st, 2023 order that's on appeal. But my reference just then was to this court's order denying our motion to strike.
All right. But you also use the phrase change in circumstances. So you have to look at that certain time period. What is the operative order and what time period did the district court and this court look at to determine whether there's been a change of circumstances?
Right. My understanding from this court's position today is it's looking at the change of circumstances from August 1st, 2023 through to today. And in this,
we're not looking at August of 2023 through today. That's the district court issue. That's not our issue. On that issue, all we're concerned about is whether some kind of remand should be granted for the district court to move forward on whatever it's going to do with the new information.
But Dan, if I'm understanding the question correctly, the change of circumstances the district court would have looked at is from the stipulated order of February 2019. Through to August 1st, 2023.
Okay, so I think it was 2019, the stipulated order?
Yes, February 2019.
18?
19. So in late 2018, the parties had a mediated agreement. And at that mediated agreement, they agreed to a certain time exchange on Tuesday nights, which was altered to Wednesday nights. I may have that night backwards, which was entered by stipulation February 2019.
All right. So what is the change of circumstances or lack thereof, you know, from your perspective, and the court shouldn't have granted or should have granted the 2023, August 2023 order?
Right. To be clear, Your Honor, I may have misspoken, meaning that the change of circumstances the district court looked at was the long history of unsubstantiated abuse allegations. In referencing this court's order denying our motion to strike, where it said review of Ms. Casas' supplemental argument and appendices may be necessary if there has been changed circumstances post-appeal. That I'm referring to is there hasn't been a change of circumstances in the regards that we are here again today with all those additional bites of the apple that I mentioned, arguing whether or not there's an allegation, whether or not Mr. Rios wants to see his children, which are arguments that Ms. Casas has made from 2015 through to today. So my position is that a couple things in response to the procedural hiccups here. To the extent that this could be treated as a motion looking for limited remand, Mr. Rios has been greatly prejudiced by his inability to respond. And one thing that I would just like to respond to, again, I'm not district court counsel, but on the issue of housing, this is an excellent moment, an example, to show why this record can't be relied on to remand or to reverse this order. Mr. Rios is married to a member of the Paiute Nation, and he has two children with his wife. They want to raise their family, understandably, on tribal land. Now, the tribal land housing system is dependent on how many people you're going to have living in that home. You're allocated both on your place in the list and the home that you will get based off of how many people reside with you. And in this instance, Mr. Rios believed he was going to have seven people residing with him. And in all of the post-appeal hiccups, he's now in a position where he needs intermediate housing, waiting for this court to resolve this issue.
So Mr. Rios testified to that at the March 1, 2024 hearing. That's what's in the minutes, that he's in a catch-22. He needs an answer and to say how many people are going to be living there. So that'll determine what housing he gets, but he can't get the housing until he knows, or he drops down on the list and somebody else has higher priority.
Correct.
So don't you want to actually use those minutes then in your argument, not strike them?
Your Honor, in this instance, no, I would like to strike still these, everything that's happened post-appeal, for the reason that Mr. Rios is not in a position to, we're not in a position to also supplement that record. Mr. Rios's housing is something that we could have discussed absent the supplemental arguments and appendices being put on appeal. So
you do still want to strike everything?
Well, in that sense that, Your Honor, a minute order under arrest is ineffective for any purpose. The arguments that I'm making to you today are still arguments that are best held before the district court, sitting as a finder of fact. So yes, to be completely fair, to give Mr. Rios full process and a chance to raise all of his arguments, then yes, we're asking this court to strike the supplemental argument appendices. Now, Your Honor, turning to the merits of the argument now, unless there's further questions on the procedure.
We might come back to it, so be prepared, but go ahead.
I will be prepared. So the district court's order in this case satisfied Nevada law for entering a order for sole physical custody, and it was not a termination of parental rights. This court, in just a little under a year ago, in July 27, 2023, entered it an order called Roe v. Roe, named Roe v. Roe. And 4 short days later, the district court entered its order that's on appeal today. And Roe took what was previously a two-prong modification standard, and in the instance of sole physical custody, expanded it into a four-prong finding. And while the district court didn't cite Roe as authority, it did satisfy Roe as a legal standard. And the two prongs that Roe has, the first is disjunctive. The first prong is either that the district court finds a parent is unfit to live with, which is not what happened here, or that the district court enters specific findings that provide an adequate explanation as to the reasons why primary physical custody is not in a child's best interest. And here we have legion of findings. The district court's order is over 30 pages long, and just to offer a snapshot of two of those pages from the record, Your Honor.
Isn't the district court supposed to make separate findings, and it would say, all right, these findings would support what I've entered, and because it's sole custody, I'm going to specifically make additional findings and explain why primary is not sufficient. But the court didn't order sole custody, so it never went through that process.
To the degree that it didn't enter sole physical and called it primary, yes, Your Honor.
By name, it did not.
By name, that's true. But James did move for sole physical custody, and while Roe does require findings in writing, which we have, it does require separate and addition findings, which we don't inform, but yes, in substance. The first prong of Roe is satisfied by the district court's findings of evidence of coaching, influence, frustration of James's relationship with the children through the entirety of the case, that Ms. Casas had lied to the court, that she withheld children from James, including during special events, that she testified under oath that she does not believe James deserves visitation with his children because of the allegations that she made, her practice of photographing the children, and I could go on, but to sum up 30 pages of findings here, the district court found that Ms. Costa's conduct interfered with the development of the children because they faced repeated examinations interviews, observations ad nauseum about abuse, which is continuing on in the district court today. Now let's turn to the second prong, Your Honor, under Roe, where the district court needed to consider the least restrictive parenting time possible that is still within the children's best interests. And we have that here as well. Just to be clear on the district court order, there was a 90-day no-contact order initially, which required James to give affirmative updates of what was happening, following which the district court created a ramp-up for Ms. Costas to regain contact with her children.
Let's just stop on the 90 days for a second. So the least restrictive alternative would be, do I have to have 90 days with zero contact with mom to allow dad to establish a relationship with the children that's been wrongfully denied from him prior to this? You know, that's the court's reasoning. Did the court ever go through that process and say, well, maybe mom could have video or phone calls or once a week or once a month? Did the court do anything like that that would be less restrictive than a 90 days with zero contact?
No, Your Honor, but that's not exactly what Roe requires.
But the purpose the court stated was to allow him to establish a relationship with the children. Can't you establish a relationship without cutting out the other parent?
Your Honor, to respectfully disagree, on page 889 of the record, the court does find that it's not just James's relationship that's of a concern, but it's the children's developmental and emotional needs that would be served by spending uninterrupted times and care for the children to stabilize. And Roe directs the least restrictive means that's in the children's best interest. And the stabilization of these children, however the unfairness of the parties this may be perceived, is what's in their best interest.
All right. You know what happened to that in the emergency motion?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
You heard what happened to that 90-day restriction
Yes. Already.
Let's move on to another point.
To follow up on the point of the appellant's view that the reviewing the entire litigation history is somehow an abuse of the district court's discretion. Now, there is not authority to limit a district court's review of what's in a child's best interest, and that's because the Nevada legislature has directed that the sole consideration of district courts, blinders on, is what's in the best interest of the children. And there is no authority that either this court or the Nevada Supreme Court has entered that provides some type of black box or blinders to restrict what a court can consider. And that's being reaffirmed in Nance v. Ferraro, Monahan v. Hogan, Romano v. Romano, that McMonagall, as miscited as it often is, cannot bind a district court's discretion here. It can only apply to a district court's review of change of circumstances. And as Your Honor, you and I discussed earlier, the previous order here that predated the August 1st, 2023 order came in February of 2019. The entire record of unsubstantiated allegations post-date that interim order. That final order. But even if this court were to adopt Ms. Costa's position that the interim order is some type of final order here, then we still satisfy a change of circumstances. Because reports to the FBI, Paiute Nation, observations by the Family Peace Center all post-date that order. Additionally, the court also hung its findings on the children's testimony and the therapist's own lack of concern about James' abuse going forward. The therapist's only concern was his lack of contact. So, turning our, to argument that the district court was biased here. As you mentioned, this is a very high bar to clear, and a particularly difficult bar when a litigant says that a district court is so biased that nothing they do can be considered, but yet supplements their argument with evidence of what the district court has found in order to support their findings.
Okay, well, don't you again want to use the part of the supplemental appendices to show what Judge Westbrook asked about at the beginning of this? The court granted Ms. Casa Gonzalez temporary custody, so that's evidence to show the court's not biased.
No, Your Honor, there's sufficient evidence within the appellate record alone to show that the court isn't biased. We don't need to reach the supplemental appendices. The district court sitting as a finder of fact, looking and interviewing the children, which Ms. Costas, if this is an error, it's one she invited, reviewing testimony and exhibits produced by Ms. Costas, sitting as a finder of fact, reviewing the history of the case, found that she was not credible, found evidence of coaching, and found evidence of influence. This is not evidence of bias. This is a district court doing its job. And I see...
Ms. Levitt, let me ask you a question. I apologize for interrupting, but I'm just curious. So we've talked about lots of circumstances historically in this case, but your client did not file his change of custody until July 7th of 2022. And many of the events that the court did look at well predated that date. Was there some change in circumstance at or near the time he filed his motion for a change of custody that required him to file that motion? Was there something that occurred or happened independent of the historical scenarios that have been discussed that necessitated filing that motion?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you, Judge Bulla. Yes, I mean, this case is unique in that all of the history is somewhat a plate of spaghetti, hard to pull apart independently. But in this case, what we have that immediately predated James' motion for sole physical custody was the Churchill County District Attorney clearing him. And ostensibly, it looks like from the record, even though the record isn't complete, that that was the moment where James was no longer under any investigations finally, and why he moved for sole physical custody. And maybe, I know my time is up, but may I briefly conclude?
Yes, go ahead.
So just so I understand, the position of the respondent is that the reason I didn't file a motion for change of custody earlier is I was under investigation and I wanted to wait till that was done before I filed my motion?
Yes, in the, to view the answer as James has talked to me about this, without the protection of the court, pretty much every time that he exchanged his children, they underwent some type of photograph, interview, some type of investigation. And that was harmful to James, certainly, but that process was horrible for his children. And so, yes, he waited for that entire process to be gone to ask for sole physical custody. So there was a clear delineation where his rights were and to get these children out of this quagmire nightmare of constant investigation and review. So to briefly...
There were reports of positive interaction between dad and children at Family Peace Center, correct?
That is correct.
He was able to have a relationship with them there.
Yes, in fact, each interaction between the children and James is overwhelmingly positive in the record and only begins to sour towards the end of the Churchill County District Attorney investigation.
But didn't the district court actually make a finding that the children's deteriorating relationship with their father constituted the change of circumstances affecting the children's welfare that warranted modification?
Yes, that was, yes, Your Honor. That was among its findings, in addition to also Dr. Rasmussen's testimony and the documentary evidence in this case. But yes, the children's own deteriorating relationship was part of that change of circumstances. So to briefly conclude, Your Honors, the district court has substantial evidence to make its findings, and nothing in the supplemental appendices or argument does anything but to really support those findings, Your Honors, that this is a long pattern. And the district court, acting in its wide discretion, entered this custodial order. And because it was supported by substantial evidence, it was not an abuse of discretion, and we ask this court to affirm.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Levitt. All right, Ms. Winston, you have four minutes. Ms. Levitt spent substantially less time on the procedural issues, but the bottom line of what she said is that they still want to pursue their motion to strike and not have the court consider anything that's happened since August of 2023.
Understood, and our bottom line is we think that the court should still deny that motion to strike and consider.
Well, since we denied it without prejudice, we're going to have to address it again. And the question still lingers with you and your client whether you're going to make the type of motion that was described in the MacManley case.
Yes, I agree, Your Honor. That right, still lingers.
Keep going.
So I think one of the first questions that Your Honor, Judge Gibbons asked was, what is the operative time period? And here we submit that the operative time period should have been from the October 12th, 2021 settlement agreement of the parties. At that hearing, which was on a hearing that had been continued because of that criminal investigation, The hearing was to handle Ms. Casas-Gonzalez's ex parte motion to suspend visitation, which was filed in September 2020. The parties went to this hearing on October 12, 2021, and as stated, were able to reach an agreement on all matters and issues pending in this action, and the party's settlement was placed on the record. The parties agreed that because of that deteriorating relationship, that it was best to have Mr. Rios do supervised visitation with the children to do a transition back to in-person unsupervised visitation. That was the goal. And Your Honor, Judge Bula, you asked what changed that made Mr. Rios file this motion seeking sole custody. The only thing that changed is that he quit going to visitation with the kids. It was hard. It's hard to rebuild that relationship. That no issue memorandum from the district attorney's office was issued in April 2021, but it was not received by the parties or the court until that October 12, 2021 hearing. So knowing that there was no criminal investigation, knowing that the CPS reports were unsubstantiated, the parties agreed. Mr. Rios needs to rebuild his relationship with the kids. They didn't know him, right? I mean, he's essentially a stranger because there's been so much absence. And I understand the position of Mr. Rios is that it is wholly Ms. Casas-Gonzalez's fault. But I submit to you that the record shows that he has had extended periods of absences from their lives on his own choice. So by July 2022, when he filed this motion for sole physical and sole legal custody, he had been doing the work. He had been going to supervised visitation. Then he starts canceling visits. He starts showing up late. The therapist, Ms. Rasmussen, testified, telling those kids that Mr. Rios is not going to show up when he has promised to be here is very problematic. They are hurt. These kids want dad in their life, even though they're mad at him. So it's Mr. Rios who was not doing the work. And instead of focusing on that time period from the party settlement agreement in October 2021, the district court relitigated the issues that we already had confirmed. His relationship with the kids had deteriorated because of long periods of absence, regardless of whose fault. It was a settlement agreement. And the reports were unsubstantiated. Knowing that information, the parties agreed a transition back to in-person visitation was in their children's best interest. That's what the district court should have focused on, and we ask that the court will reverse.
Before you step away, Judge Bowler, Judge Westbrook, do you have any other questions?
I do not have anything further. Thank you.
I don't have anything further either.
Okay. Anything more about the procedural aspect of this case? Your last word on it?
Well, Your Honor, if the court is inclined to say there's a change in circumstances, which I agree that there is, we would request that the court do a limited remand to address the current situation of the children, if that's the most appropriate route.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you all very much.